Coming up on Patriots This Week, they were on a mission in Miami, clinch the division, and make a mission statement.
Running past the five, diving to the end zone.
That's a big boy drive right there.
But there would be no miracle in Miami this time.
There's nothing really from last game that is going to help us this week.
This week brings a familiar foe.
They play fast and they play hard.
A championship rematch.
They play physical football. We try to do the same.
With a playoff berth at stake.
It's going to be a big test.
That's right now on Patriots This Week.
This time, there was no miracle in Miami. After three consecutive weeks of living on the edge and last-second heroics, it was a day for the Dolphins. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Patriots This Week. I'm Scott Zolak, and joining me as usual, former tight end Jermaine Wiggins. What's up, Wiggy?
What up, Zo? We're
a little festive around here.
Yeah, it is.
Nice to dress. Former linebacker Matt Chatham. How you doing, Matt?
What's up, Zo?
All right, guys, if you guys have been through these games, and we call them hot T-shirt games over the years, first time in the Bill Belichick era that they did not clinch a division-winning type game where that scenario is present to them. They didn't take advantage of opportunities. Wiggy, let's start with you. What's the one thing you took away from the Miami game when you watch this team play?
When they get down in the red zone, for me, they have to come away with touchdowns. And they had some opportunities. They had some chances there, a couple drop balls. You go back and look at it. They could have won the football game. They get down in the red zone. On their first drive, they come away with a field goal rather than a touchdown, whether it's play call, whether it's plays. I just think when you get inside the red zone, especially now, you got to come away with touchdowns.
Miami held them to two field goals. How much of a mental edge win is that for you as a defense, where it seems you can't stop them, but boy, we found a way to hold them to three?
Right. It's the smaller room argument, because you get them backed up and then you can be more aggressive in those small spaces, because if you miss, it's not, you know, a 30 or 40 yard play. You got them in the red zone. And I think groups that know that the yards passing underfoot aren't nearly as relevant if I can just stop you here. And I think when you look with Miami's front, big guys, bigger guys do better not out in space. You know, maybe you can move it up and down in the middle of the field, but when we get you in this small room, we'll be able to stop you. The team this week, the Ravens, are built much that same way. When you have a bigger, beat 'em up, physical kind of group, they like life in there.
Wiggy, you look at this team and the way the offense operated. I thought Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola in this game were huge. And I thought Brady, at times, got in rhythm. What happened to Shane Vereen in this football game?
I think Miami was expecting Vereen to have a big role. And the one thing that they were doing, and when you look at some the way they were playing him, is they were playing him off the ball. So now he's in the backfield.
They're waiting for him outside. Yeah. They got linebackers.
The thing is when you're a linebacker and you're playing, Matt will tell you, when you're at that depth and that running back comes out of the backfield, you already have good leverage on him. You just have to keep him in front of you. And I think we saw the Miami Dolphins do that. Their defensive scheme was keep him in front of us, let him catch it, and then we'll tackle.
You'll never have an offense that works that's centered around a running back as a pass catcher. That's just not how – those are the condiments. I mean, you're never going to have a meal of just ketchup, mayo, and mustard. That's not how it works. Those are the things that are extra that make things better. And I think you don't –
I like Thousand Island.
Yeah, oh, you're Thousand Island? I'm a blue cheese guy. So I don't think that we could ever have expected that guy was going to get 12 targets a game. And I think the other way you take them away, and I think this is important, is beyond just how you decide to cover them or with whom – you pressure the team, and when the Patriots pressured, that forces the running back to be part of the protection. The best way to keep him from running routes is to give him another job.
All right, Wiggy, you look at some of the blown opportunities, and we've seen over the last 3 weeks, to be exact, fourth quarter, where New England finds a way to make that play. Yet you go back to last Sunday, Gostkowski, after you finally take the lead with under 5 minutes, after actually under 4 minutes left in the football game, kicks it out of bounds. You were on the other end of that when John Casey kicked it out of bounds. You may have another ring here, right?
Yeah, I would definitely have another ring.
I mean, how deflating is that for a defense when you got to take the field?
You know, it's so deflating, especially for an offensive player who's on the sidelines looking at this now, knowing that, okay, now that team only has to go 25 yards. But as for a defense, I think the biggest thing, and Matt can probably attest to this, is now it changes up your whole defensive philosophy. You can't play maybe the same way you would play if they have the ball at the 20 versus the 40. And I think that was the biggest thing on that drive. So now, especially when you look at, and you're the offense, and we only have to get in field goal range, now you don't have to press it, or you can press it a little bit more knowing that, okay, we're close enough to field goal range.
Yeah, I was there. Obviously, it was Casey was coming off the field and got a chance to say, hey, sorry to hear that as he walked the other way. And trust me, I love to dive into the X's and O's, I think there is a real emotional component to this one, something that's sort of an off-the-field thing where it's deflating to the other group and then as you're running on the field, you're just like, okay, this changes the entire formula. I think that's a big part of the story.
What did you see with Aqib Talib and, you know, playing him inside on the slot? Now let's go back to Clay. Remember, we were sitting here last week. We talked about this tight end Clay who had, I think, 26 catches out of the last three games. So good job trying to take him out, right?
Yeah, he did a good job, but it wasn't a one-for-one thing. I think what was interesting in this game is beyond just the fact that Clay had been productive and had been getting high targets in the last several, the other guy who would be the other option is a fast guy, a Mike Wallace, who probably isn't a good matchup for Tlaib. So there's sort of two sides to that story. But the whole Tlaib versus Clay thing changed from series to series, which I think kept it confusing because sometimes he was on him, sometimes he wasn't. Sometimes they were playing man, sometimes they were playing zone. Tlaib played on Heartline for a little while. You know, it got mixed up, which I think is a good sort of draw from Patricia.
All right, we got to talk about life without Rob Gronkowski. I would be concerned if when I watch this game, it reminded me of the first 5 weeks of the season where this offense was anemic at times, three and out, three and out. They had over 450 yards in this game, Wiggy. Are you concerned life without Gronk moving forward, or is this strictly a red zone issue?
I think the biggest thing is if you can get the younger guys back, Dobson and Tompkins, they give you another element in the red zone that what Gronk gave you, and not, they're not that they're going to be on the same level as Gronk, but the ability to throw high balls, jump ball situations, put it up high and let your big receiver or, you know, in Gronkowski's case, your big tight end go get it. I think they'll add that element. But yes, when you lose Gronkowski, you lose a very, very valuable portion of your offense. You need to get some of those younger guys back because Edelman, Amendola, Vereen, they really don't have that element of throwing the ball up and going.
Yeah, because you can imagine how the Miami game plan may have changed. There isn't going to be the outside big, tall 6'3 right. receiver. There's not going to be Tompkins. Having both down sort of changes what you're going to go after.
And you knew Dobson and Tompkins were
exactly.
Out,
so when you knew when you're both down and we got into that red zone, what they did was pressure. And think about what pressuring forces you to do. It's three-step passing. The fade is very important.
Yes.
Because you can't route read and things don't get a chance to develop. You have to have that 1 foot in the back and just put it up. And when the guy's going to get it or 5'10", I mean, they did a great job. They were super productive throughout the day, but that route doesn't match the skill set, and they really looked like they needed it.
You know, from an offensive line standpoint, I thought Logan Mankins did pretty good when he kicked outside the left tackle.
You know, when you play on that offensive line and you're a guy that has played that position, you can kind of move out there. Now, granted, it'll be a little bit different for him. He has to kind of get his feet wet and get back underneath it, but when you look at his ability to be out there. He's a veteran. He understands, you know, what guys like to do. I think that's the biggest thing is his knowledge of the game and his experience will help him with some guys that he might have to block.
Here's to me the biggest part of that. He plays left guard, so he's able to bump the left tackle. In other words, he doesn't have to flip his feet. The two guys who otherwise would have placed him are a right guard and a right tackle.
True.
So it's not just guard or tackle. Yeah. It's flipping your feet and playing the other side. At least you stay sort of symmetrical to what you're used to doing.
All right, guys, good stuff. Wrapping up that Miami game. When we come back, we've got to talk about the AFC playoff picture. It's shaking down. Not many weeks left. Plus, oh yeah, Tony Romo. It's the gift that keeps on giving. That more on Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is on Michael Ho'omanawanui. The translation of his Hawaiian last name means to be patient. The 6'4", 260-pound tight end went to the University of Illinois and made one of the season's most sensational catches on this 13-yard TD grab against the Dolphins. This week's Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. And taking a look at things that are shaking down in the AFC, guys, from a playoff picture standpoint. You know, obviously last Thursday night, Denver blew an opportunity. So you're thinking, okay, New England's in the driver's seat. They did control, or they had control, the number one seed. That's out the window. They lose. So the top two seeds go down. Here come the Cincinnati Bengals into Pittsburgh. And you're thinking, Pittsburgh not really with it this year. What do you make of Cincinnati, Wiggy, just having no pulse in Pittsburgh?
I just don't think Marvin Lewis is a very good head coach. I think he's a good defensive coordinator. And you look at Andy Dalton, I think he's very inconsistent at the quarterback. So when you talk about your head coach not really having that ability to get his team to understand what's at stake here, and then you have a quarterback who's inconsistent, and the team is just a little bit kind of, you know, everybody's doing their own thing there. And that's the way I feel about the Cincinnati Bengals.
Matt?
See, I look at the entire AFC picture, and I say everybody's inconsistent. Mm-hmm. So, of course, since he definitely fits that bill, especially from the quarterback and head coach, as you mentioned. But if you look at all the other teams in the division, I mean, Denver lays an egg at home against San Diego, a warm-weather team that comes out to play in the cold in Denver and doesn't do well. Really, the only team to me that looked good last week and is actually peaking a bit is Kansas City. But can you really rely on that offense to produce each and every week? So I think really the theme of the entire conference is inconsistency.
Talk about consistency. Week in, week out, end of the year, the Dallas Cowboys. Boy, a team with talent, an owner that loves to meddle, and a quarterback that I guys just think is – that he thinks is better than he really is. Tony Romo checks out of a run play with the lead. Not only that, they had a 23-point lead at home against Green Bay. Tony Romo checks to a pass. And Jason Garrett said after the game, we had a run call, but Tony has the ability to get out of it. Wiggy, you've been around this team here for a while. If Bill Belichick called a run or Bill Parcells back in the day, and Matt, you've been around it, and the quarterback checks out of it and gets scatterbrained and throws a pick over the middle, what would your team think of that?
You know, they would be livid. But I think
what do you think of Romo?
But the key is this, though, is what you said: Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells, your head coach. When you got a head coach like Jason Garrett,
it's a puppet
who doesn't have control of that. So Romo knows, all right, I can go out there and check out of a run in a situation where we should just run the football, and my coach is really not going to do anything. Then you have another player who walks off the field with a minute or so and change left. To me, it's about that head coach, and they'll never be able to have a head coach that can put their foot down as long as Jerry Jones is the coach. They tried it with Parcells, and they tried it with Jimmy Johnson.
Go to the stat guy here. Okay, 30 plays in the second half. You have a 23-point lead. You ran it 7 times, and that's what Dallas did.
Yeah, I can't look at that hard as I have to look at the Monty Kiffin decision. To me, that's still a Jerry Jones question. Yep. I'm looking at Rob Ryan and all the great job he's done on New Orleans and the way they've turned around that defense and kept them relevant. You bring in Monty, and to me, the real story of Dallas is, I know people love to pile on Tony and Jason Garrett and all that, but the defense is abysmal. I mean, they're literally bereft in a lot of talent in a lot of positions. Ware's banged up now. Sean Lee's gone, and they've missed on some other spots. The real story is, you know, not that they gave up 26-3 with the offensive play calling. It's, from my view, it's how he gave up the 23 points, which is a defensive question. So, again, it's the meddling owner thing. He's on the radio actually doing, call-in stuff like this and talking scheme and talking all this stuff. You don't need your owner doing that.
All right, guys, good stuff. We've got to talk about two really good AFC teams because we got a rematch of the last two AFC championship games. Talk about those Baltimore Ravens next on Patriots this week. All right, here we go. It's Baltimore Raven week again, and it's like deja vu. Every one of these games means something. Let's go to the tape now. I'm glad the Harbaugh brothers got together, and they got rid of Anquan Boldin. But there's one guy you do got to worry about. That's why I hope. Aqib Talib's healthy. But from a special teams perspective, Jacoby Jones, watch this guy get to the gate. When I say the gate, that's the one right here. Big swinging gate. That's what returners are looking for. This is the pop that Julian Edelman gives your New England Patriots. So Jacoby Jones in return game. Well, here we go again. And this is a team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, that know this guy very well. Why? Divisional opponent. So what do? They kick it away to him. And remember what Mike Tomlin did this infamous night. Here comes Jones, little wiggle here. And I want you to freeze it right there because Bill Belichick, you never turn and you never look at the video boards. That's why we like our coach, not Mike Tomlin. Go ahead and roll the tape. Oh, man, you can't do that to a returner. Distracts him, cuts inside. Saves the Ravens from getting a touchdown right there. And one more look at it here against Minnesota. Talk about a guy. We've seen him get to the wall. We've seen him pick a spot. Now this is just flat out, I'm going to crease this thing. That's speed. That's motion. Jacoby Jones, number 12. You got to find out where he is on the field. And it's Ravens week. I'm going to fly away. I'm going to dance, get a little bit of this, a little bit of this. Bam, here's your Zo Show.
The Zo Show is brought to you by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. And after a 3-5 start for the Baltimore Ravens, here we go again. It's the end of the year, guys. They find a way to be decent in the last 6 games. And I say decent, they're 5-1. It's pretty darn good. They're back in the playoff picture. But you go back to the Detroit game of last week, and I think that's pretty much their season in a nutshell, where Flacco isn't great, but he's good enough, it seems at times. 18 touchdowns, 17 picks. Matt, I'm going to start with you first. What are the Baltimore Ravens? And this is a team that I think in the back of their mind feels that, you know what, we got New England.
They're just another one of these inconsistent AFC teams. I don't know who's going to show up. You look at 2 weeks ago, and Flacco throws 3 picks. And yet there were some yards productions for whatever that's worth. And then the Detroit game, they score on, what, 5 field goals, I think it was? You know, they can't put the ball across the line. So I look at them as a little bit like last year, but this is who I thought Joe was before he had the Super Bowl run last season, a guy that will put it up, give you opportunities. Some weeks you'll take it off him, some weeks you won't. He's good but not great. The person I look at, though, that you're going to need to stop is offensive production that's not on the offense as much is Jacoby Jones. And his special teams productions is really why we're talking about that 5-1 start. The return he had against the Steelers, the return he had against the Vikings late, in last week's game where they couldn't punch it in the end zone, a 24-yard punt return. He's the guy that moves the ball when Joe can't.
How much can Dennis Pitta be problematic in a guy like Dixon, the other tight end? Because if you look at it, Dane Fletcher, yeah. It's Spikes, you know, playing on one leg. Who's going to cover these guys
well,
in the middle?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're going to have issues anyways, regardless. I mean, they seems like they always have issues with the tight end position. You look at Pitta now getting back there, and he's more of a security blanket for Flacco. And I think when you look at the Baltimore Ravens football team, I think the one thing that concerns you a little bit with them is that in their mind, they're a confident football team. Joe Flacco, granted, he's up and down, and I wouldn't have gave him that contract, but he's a very confident,
oh, he earned it.
Very confident quarterback.
Can they apply pressure on Tom Brady?
They can force turnovers, and I don't know if it's through pressure or just simply when you're in the red zone, which is what Dean Pease has done so well for them, our old coordinator from here. Dean does a great job of intermittently using pressure. He doesn't use it sort of wantonly like a Wade Phillips kind of guy. He does it when it matters, and they've been really good in the red zone. So, again, it's not just the white lines passing underfoot. It's the scoring area, and that's where Dean has done a great job. And I think the biggest thing here is, like we mentioned, the big guys from Miami, Nada runs the shows. There's no Red, there's no Ed Reed, there's no Ray Lewis, but there's this giant human being in the middle that's much more effective in the small room of that part of the field, the red zone.
How about your boy T. Sizzle?
I think when you look at Baltimore and T. Sizzle and how they're going to try to get him.
Why does he hate Brady?
I think he doesn't hate Brady.
It's called envy.
I think the thing he thinks is that they don't respect anybody else. Yeah, they're one of those silver spoon teams, which is completely, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
That's what teams with bravado, with an edge, they got to take on that.
But I think that's a good matchup to watch opposite him. Now you have Doomerville, so you have two pretty good outside rush guys that can get there.
Well, here's the important thing, though. It's going to be cold, right? So the kinds of pass rushing, the kinds of guys that are good pass rushers when it's cold, are the guys that don't have to run the corner.
Yeah.
It's not like a Mathis guy so much as a Suggs, who's a power rusher.
Coming up next, our picks. We give our predictions, plus our game changer when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Who should you start in your fantasy playoff matchup? Try Seattle's wideout, Doug Baldwin. He's gotten into the end zone 4 times in the last 6 games and should be primed for a big week against a banged-up Arizona secondary. Let's stay with the Cardinals, but keep Larry Fitzgerald on your bench. The Seahawks secondary is #1 in the NFL, and Arizona's best receiver will be hard-pressed to find big yardage. And for this week's sleeper, let's look at the Bengals. Marvin Jones has had a touchdown in each of the last 2 games. Jones should be able to find some open room in the Minnesota Vikings secondary.
The Fantasy Lowdown is brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week. Time now for our predictions and our game changers. Start with the bald guy.
Bald guy. That would be me. I'm going to go with the Patriots in a really close one just because I believe in them not losing twice in a row. I'm going with that stat. 26-24 in a really close game, and I'm doubling down from last week because I think it's going to be Stephen Ridley as your game changer. Committing to the regular run game, not shotgun runs.
Yeah.
All right, Wiggy.
I'm going to go 24-21. Patriots win this game. They know what's at stake right now. They got to go down to Baltimore. They have to win. My game changer is this. Logan Mankins. Look at him. He might be playing left tackle. It's going to be interesting to see how he performs out there.
All right, I'm going to give you my game changer first. It's going to be Chandler Jones. His ability to apply pressure from the edge, crank that thing up, get on Joe Flacco. Remember, Flacco got hit in that knee late in that game against Detroit. Love to see the other guy in there. I think it's Tyrod Taylor. Get that guy in there. And I got the Patriots 23-21 in a tight one. Then they're going to the playoffs. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Patriots This Week. For Matt Chatham, for Jermaine Wiggins, I'm Scott Zolak. Thanks for watching. See you next time on Patriots This Week.